Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Amy Dowji, and this is, of course, the big picture. Wow. Hey, you people are looking so well, eh? Alhamdulillah. Taxis are not flat yet. How many rozas are still left to go? Firstly, let me wish you all Ramadan Kareem, and also to a special guest listening far away, and that is Shaknoza in Uzbekistan, and Leila in Iran. They also send messages to all South Africans. And my dear friend, 7-year-old, and his name is Abdullah Akuji in Polokwane, my favorite listener. Now, I pray that it will be a wonderfully fulfilling month for you all, inshallah, in every way possible. And in many ways, this Ramadan is going to be so different from that which you experienced for all your life previously. This lockdown Ramadan will probably make you feel sad that you will be missing out on what was routinely done. The Taraweeh, the get-together at iftar, especially with family at weekends, and so on. And let's be frank, the days will seem longer when you have little to do. But let me touch on something that maybe you can use to explain Ramadan to your friends who are not Muslims. You know, a few days ago, Radio Cosmos from Namibia called me to explain to its listeners what Ramadan is all about. And they call me now and then to explain certain things relating to the Muslim world. For example, when U.S. President Donald Trump says there is a ban on Muslims entering the United States from certain countries and so on. By the way, I said to you before, who is the Vice President of America? Yes, it's Mike Pence. Mike, of course, is short for Michael or Mickey. So Mickey and Donald, two Disney characters, are running the United States. And 2 days ago at the press conference, Donald said that bleach and disinfectants like Dettol can kill a virus in a minute. So if you inject yourself with it, it could kill the coronavirus. Dear people, out of 350 million people in the United States of America, how did they select the worst mampara to be president? Ekdam dance. The mind, senor, she boggles. But let's get back to Radio Cosmos in Namibia. The lady asked me, tell us about the Ramadan. It's an Afrikaans radio station, so I have to keep it simple, but not like, how's it put? No, biltong and dry place for 30 days. Okay, my China. So what I said is this. If you go to the gym only once a week, say maybe on a Sunday, and you have a good workout, then you feel wonderfully energetic for the rest of the week until your next training session, again next Sunday. Well, Ramadan is something like that. For 30 days, one whole month, we go through a very vigorous training session that will keep us energized for the 11 months that will follow until the next Ramadan month. And this is in many ways, in many different ways. The whole 11 months, for example, we sometimes eat and drink, indulge whatever and wherever we can, whatever we want to. No discipline. So with Ramadan from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., we eat and drink nothing, zero. Not a sip of water, even if the temperature is 40 degrees, and not even a tiny peanut. You can't have anything, nothing. Disciplines our bodies, it cleanses it, and it has been scientifically proven that fasting is good for the body. It strengthens it in many ways. The health benefits are many. Secondly, it's a month of spiritual training, where you must be closer to God by spending much time in praying. That's why it's called a holy month, the best month, because you are spiritually uplifted. Thirdly, Muslims are commanded by God to give 2.5% of their wealth in charity during the year. It's compulsory. But in this month, Ramadan, Muslims are told to give as much as you can to people who are battling. Give money, give food, help the poor in every way you possibly can. Be very charitable. And under the lockdown conditions, Muslims have already started distributing food parcels, and this will increase much more in this month of Ramadan. Now, here is another very important part. And this is what I told them also. Yes, Muslims must not eat or drink anything, but it's not only what goes into the mouth that is forbidden, but also what comes out of it also. You must not use bad language if you've been doing it, frequently. And no slander, no gossiping, no expression of jealousy or hatred. And most importantly, you must control your temper. If you usually get angry about big or small things that make you fed up, then you have to control yourself. You got to be chilled. You got to be cool. No matter how much you have been provoked. And that's the word, control. Yes, that's it. Ramadan is the month when you train yourself to do good and be good. Just as you push yourself on the treadmill to have more energy and strength for the next 6 days. And therefore, the training in Ramadan keeps you spiritually and physically strong for the following 11 months. Basically, that's the reason why God has declared this the best of all months. So, dear listeners, a very simple, appealing message, easy to understand. And the person who recorded the interview, her name is Angie at Cosmos Radio. She says, wow, Mr. Dawdy, I thought it was only about Muslims. They mustn't eat and drink. Yes, sis, I'm now so impressed with your Ramadan. And let me just focus now on the last aspect, controlling one's nafs. That's bad character, negative things, especially the part about anger. And every year, I mention this story. Two Hindu girls working in a shop in town, here in Durban. One says to the other, hey, today is the first day of the Muslim fasting month. And the other girl says, hey, you're so good. How do you know so much about the Muslim? And the first girl answers, the girl said, how do you know the fast started today and all, man? And the first girl answered, that's when the boss is in a bad mood and he starts swearing. Then I know that it's the first day of the Muslim Ramadan month. So dear Mamu, put a lid on it, okay? Control the temper, otherwise you are doing damage to your Rosa. How many times you heard people say something like this in a very cross voice? Hey, don't start with me, okay? I got Rosa. The message that they are saying is, that they're projecting is, my fuse is short and I may explode. What absolute nonsense. In Ramadan, the fuse has to be very long, a mile long. Control the nafs, Habibi, the nafs. Enough said. Now, to an important announcement. Ladies, you are all angels. Let me repeat that. Ladies, you are all angels. Struz, Bob, eh? That's a very old expression from the old days. LM radio days. I won't go into that one. Ladies, since the lockdown, you've been working harder than normal. Kids at home and that lazy lump sitting on the sofa in the lounge, all grumpy. Now, you're going to make lunch and the cleaning up never stops. Did you have a chance to make your samosas? Did you? Did Grumpy volunteer to come and help you to make them? And his first attempt to make a samosa, well, instead of having three hookies, it had an extra one. It turned out very square. The man failed maths in standard 7. How do you expect him to make a triangle, eh? And after he dropped blobs of the paste to seal the samosas all over the table, you sent him packing back to the lounge where he sat with a big puff pastry face. Yar, no spots, nothing. And some will do anything to get a stompy with a few puffs still left in it. So ladies, you deserve medals, eh? Really, you deserve medals. Especially now that it's going to get even more unbearable. It's going to get even more unbearable. During the lockdown, he used to have, breakfast. Then maybe mid-morning, he would have some tea and biscuits. And then lunch, and then mid-afternoon. Fatima, bring me a bowl of ganchas. And then later on supper. So that routine of his, that routine he had for all these days since the lockdown. Now it's going to be, well, let's put it this way, dry jaw, no chowing activity to keep him occupied. He's going to get on your nerves. So control your anger, ladies. You're going to get lots of sawab this Ramadan. Okay, let's get into the current topic of discussion everywhere, and that is corona. The whole world is desperately fighting the virus, and we are fighting each other in court. Wonderful stuff, ne? You will hear more about that later in the program. But let me focus on the speech of our president, Cyril Ramaphosa. Cyril Ramaphosa made about the phased lifting of the lockdown. You know, he's so good. He's so dignified, so avuncular, so authoritative, a well-modulated voice that inspires confidence and calms the nation. A true statesman. And then he blew it all at the end when he tried to put the mask on. The whole of South Africa fell down laughing. Looked like he was pulling a pair of underpants over his head. The one thing I can tell you, social media is very, very, very sharp. Within minutes, pictures of him went viral with all kinds of funny comments. The one that gave me a stomaching from laughing was the one where his eyes are covered with a mask and the words, Wazy. To the children. And there were many other crazy ones also. People focused on that more than on his speech, which of course was very important. Basically, he said that slowly in stages, more and more people will be allowed to go out and work. All this will be made clear during the coming week. But I want to make a strong appeal to our president. Please let the barbershops open, okay? Yeah, 4 weeks, no haircut. I was in a supermarket queue with my trolley, and the person in front of me with long hair, lovely long hair, was unconsciously drifting backwards. I said, hey, auntie, watch out, then you're going to knock into my trolley. And the person turned around and said, hey, bro, who are you calling auntie? It was an uncle with a big beard. Yes, barbershops should be allowed to open. The day before the lockdown, I told my barber, okay, send it on number one, meaning the machine will be cut my hair so that it's almost like I'm totally bald, to pull through the lockdown. But now I noticed an untidy lot of danya sprouting on top of my head. I suppose I have to go and buy a pair of clippers somewhere. Saw some uncles who got haircuts from their fros. Yes, sir. Full of red bites all over. So they should just do what was done in them days. It's called a dish cut, where they put a dish over your head like a helmet and then cut the hair all around there and cut it very short. Mind you, I see it these days also. Young guys with nice hair, they cut all around up to ear level, very, very short, and leave one big bush on the top. And by the way, the bullies will agree with me, although I'm only about 34 or is it 43, I don't know. It's remarkable how when the hair on top of the head starts to disappear, the hair in the nose and eyebrows starts growing very fast, even sometimes out of the ears. Very strange indeed. So I decided to let my eyebrows grow very, very long and comb it all back over my head to cover the bald patches. Okay. Now, let's stop all this nonsense and get down to serious stuff. And of course, COVID-19, the coronavirus is serious stuff. Let me put on my prophet of doom hat on again. Brother Cyril and his government don't know what to do. I feel sorry for him, really. Lift the lockdown even gradually so people can work, earn money and survive, and the virus will go viral, which it will. By September, it will reach nightmare proportions. And there will be another lockdown. Or, so don't lift the lockdown now and people will be starving to death. It's already at that stage now. The most heartbreaking sight I saw on TV was a young mother with three small kids. And she said, I hope that me and my children get the virus because then we can go to hospital where we will get food. I was so stunned that it took me a while to get my breath back and to think deeply about all the blessings we take for granted. My table is full every day. The pro will ask, what do you want to eat today? And there's no restriction on what to choose. So you want meat or fish or veg and juice and cold drinks and everything. Full. And this lady wishes for the virus. That brought tears to my eyes. Sunday Times front page headline, hunger stalks South Africa. Huge picture, three kids about 5 years old sitting on a very rough, stony ground. And they had like Rama margarine type plastic containers. And their hands were held together praying that they got some food from a charity organization. I turned the page and I read National Shelter Movement Executive Head Dr. Zubeda Dango said, hunger and food insecurity are dire. The movement is an umbrella organization for 80 shelters housing more than 1,000 abused mothers and children. She says a big concern from the lockdown is the number of mothers coming to the shelter with the children who are starving. Right, I'm not going to read the rest of that. And then when I turned the page, I saw Paula Proudlock, a senior legal researcher at the University of Cape Town Children's Institute, said that 10 million, listen to this, 10 million children who benefit from school feeding schemes are now all at home. And she says the meal they received daily at the school was often the only meal for many of them. Right, I don't want to go into more of that. Just that to say that hungry people are knocking on my driveway gate all the time. More and more will be knocking in the dark days ahead. More and more people will be knocking. So, dear listeners, throughout this Ramadan, think of the horror people are experiencing. The unplanned rozas started long ago, and for many, it doesn't end with an iftar meal. Open your minds, open your hearts this Ramadan and give as much as you can, as much as you can. It's a different Ramadan for you and it's a very different time for them also. Eat less this Ramadan, but prepare more food to give away. May Allah soften your hearts and grant you and your family a blissful and spiritually uplifting Ramadan, inshallah. Okay, so now we will look at the dramatic events relating to the court case about whether the masjid should be opened or closed. And to unpack what happened in court during the week, we have attorney Aslam Mayat, the erudite, articulate, effervescent gentleman who occasionally stands in to do my program, The Big Picture, when I'm off gallivanting somewhere in the world. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam, baby. You're putting me on the spot now.
Most certainly I am, yes. So let's get through it as quickly as we can. What is the position of mosques during lockdown?
Currently, and until the 1st of May when lockdown ends, all religious gatherings are illegal and mosques have to be closed. The single exception is for funerals, which can have a maximum of up to 50 people.
But Aslam, I saw a video interview with senior attorney Zahir Umar. He said it was lawful for all Muslims to pray at the masajid.
Yeah, look, it's unfortunate. Some confusion may have been caused by that viral clip video that you're talking of attorney Zahir Umar. In an interview outside court on Thursday, Zahir said that based on the number of people and their behavior in the courtroom, he felt that it was legal for Muslims to attend religious gatherings at masajids, and that if anyone was charged, he would defend them free of charge. This opinion of his is incorrect. The regulations are clear. Gatherings at the masjid, other than, as we mentioned, the strict regulations pertaining to funerals, is unlawful. Anyone found disobeying the law is likely to be criminally prosecuted. And as an officer of the court, I have to tell you, you must obey the law. United Ulama Council, that is UQSA, which represents the majority of Muslim organizations in 9 provinces, says that from an Islamic perspective, the right to life and the obligation to prevent others from being harmed are paramount. The lockdown law is permissible and appropriate and must be obeyed. Now, incidentally, so you've got the legal and you've got the Islamic Sharia point of view, majority of viewpoint. Now, incidentally, yesterday, Zaif Umar issued a letter on his attorney's letterhead retracting his theatrics. In an about face, Zaif states, and I quote, "There should be no misunderstanding. All members of the public must abide the law. The regulations that have been published must be abided by. The outcome of the judgment will let us know whether we should proceed with Jamaat Salah in the masjid or not. And until then, we must continue with our Salat and Taraweeh in our homes."
So, Aslam, that is very clear. Congregational prayer, other than for funerals, is prohibited. And taboo, basically it's finish and clap. Okay, it is beyond question that congregational prayers at masajid are unlawful. What about at flats and gated estates? Can the residents in some schemes not gather for communal prayers?
Yeah. Amy, look, that's an interesting question you raised, but unfortunately the answer is no. It would be unlawful to do so. The regulations, the definition of places of religious gatherings is very widely defined. So if residents of a block of flats gather together at a Jamaat Khana inside that complex, or they use some other room to have congregational prayers, that is unlawful. Now, this view is supported by a legal opinion from Advocate Aslam Mutala SC. So I think, you know, we should accept it as correct.
Now, the entire South African Ummah was locked down, for lack of a better word, from 10:30 a.m. till 4 p.m. on Thursday, glued to the court live proceedings on ITV. Can you explain what the case was about?
Okay, I'll go on. If you need to interrupt me, please do so at any stage. The urgent application was brought by the Us Sadiqeen Islamic Center of Didier. One of the alims teaching there deposed to the affidavit. Their legal team was attorney Zahir Umar, his son Advocate Abu Bakr Umar, and senior counsel Boda. The applicants applied for alternative orders, the first being a final order. The ban on all religious gatherings, whether it's Christian, Hindu, Jewish, whatever, must be lifted. Now, it is unlikely that such an order can succeed because the urgent manner in which this case was brought meant that very few people had prior notice of this case. Then they said that if the court would not grant them this final order to lift all religious gatherings, not only mosques, then this one Dijil masjid only must be allowed to operate. So only one mosque they're asking for, the applicant's mosque, the Asad Islamic Center, that must be allowed to operate under sanitary conditions such as a mask, gloves, bring your musalla, hand must be sanitized before you enter, etc., etc. And there were other proposals, I don't go too much into it, but they limited the number to 20 at a time. And each musalli first had to obtain a permit from a magistrate.
Mm.
Should I carry on? You got any questions?
Yeah, no. I'm listening.
Okay, that's basically the case that was presented by the applicants in a nutshell. The respondent was the state, which opposed the relief. The state was represented by Senior Counsel Goodman and Advocate Shahnaz Bismillah. The government has a 45-member task team of the best scientific experts covering all the scientific disciplines. And it's headed up by the world-renowned Professor Salim Abdul Karim. Now, the job of the task team is to analyze and so on, and then they advise government. The government then has to weigh up the difficult choices and achieve achieve the optimum balance between health and economy, taking into consideration pressure from powerful interest groups like monopoly capital, taxi industry, trade unions. Now, this unenviable task of government is to flatten the curve. We will have infections. We will have deaths. The best we can pray for is to keep the curve flat so that our health infrastructure can cope. Now, if the health system is overburdened, now, in our country, with our high HIV/AIDS and TB patients, it will collapse, and we are doomed. The lockdown has actually achieved so far, and South Africa is unique. That is the only country in the world that has very early been able to flatten the curve. Now, it's early days. We have to remain vigilant. We mustn't get complacent and think, as you, I think you mentioned earlier, the worst is possibly still to come. And, and that's the view of the scientists, the scientific team that's there. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, I'm just telling you what they put in the court papers. There were two other people who pitched up in court. One was the United Ulama Council of South Africa, UKSA. They were represented by attorney Aslam Musadi and senior counsel Palm. They were admitted as a friend of the court or amicus. Now, as I explained earlier, UKSA comprises all the jamaats of all the provinces and MJC, Muslim Judicial Council in Cape Town. Now, one must understand that you've got the applicant and you've got the respondents. They fighting out the matter between themselves. If anybody wants to oppose or get involved in any big way, they've got to become a party to the matter. If, on the other hand, you came there to assist the court, you could come in as a friend, as an amicus of the court, which is what UKSA did, and they came there to give an alternative majority Islamic viewpoint. That there was no sin on a person if he missed congregational namaz as a consequence of obeying the corona lockdown laws. Now, UKSA portrayed, and in my opinion correctly, but as I say, I'm a scholar, Islam as an accommodating, reasonable, middle path religion that could easily coexist within a democracy like South Africa. There was another amicus, and that was the Women's Cultural Group, represented by attorney Aslam Maed and Pretoria advocate Anissa Kesri. Women's Cultural Group was admitted as an amicus. Now, Anissa is an ex-Overport girl, Durban CBD, before she's relocated to Pretoria. Now, Women's Cultural Group assisted the court with a unique female perspective. If a husband went to the masjid and contracted COVID, he would bring it back home, and there was a real danger that he could spread this to his household. And if he had more than one wife, then more than one household. Women's Cultural Group argued that should the court allow the Dijio Masjid to open under whatever circumstances and conditions, then the Musalli must first get the approval of the wife, the minor children, the domestic servants in the household, and anybody else living in that household, because they are interested, and as a women's group, they had to bring forward the fears and sentiments of women.
I thought that the advocate for the Women's Cultural Group, Anissa Kesari, was articulate and did a good job. What's your view of that?
Look, I actually got quite a lot of feedback from others of a similar nature. Thank you, AB. I'm going to pass that on to Anissa. I'm sure she'd be happy to hear that. But coming from none other than AB Dalji, it has high praise indeed.
So why was Amal not amicus? And tell us what is AMAL, what it stands for.
Yeah, look, that's actually a good question. Amal is the Association of Muslim accountants and lawyers, based mainly in Durban, but we've got a footprint in Peter Maritzburg, Cape Town, and also trying to get a footprint in Transvaal as well. Look, only for the pleasure of Allah, faithful to its mandate and obligation to inform the Muslim Ummah about the evolving lockdown laws. On the 26th of March, Amal issued a letter to correct an incorrect view of the law expressed by a lawyer, prominent lawyer.
Right.
The importance of this legal opinion in this letter of Amal was actually recognized by government, also by UKSA, who each put up this Amal letter in their application papers to court now. Now, an amicus has to assist the court by bringing something not covered by the applicants or the respondents. Now, after having carefully considered the papers of government, of the applicants, and even UKSA, which was the amicus that was admitted, Amal saw that both legal, which it was primarily the expert in, and the Sharia aspects had been adequately addressed already. And as an esteemed lawyers association, it would not be proper for Amal to apply to become an amicus because they were not bringing anything new to the court.
But besides Muslim groups, did any other faith group intervene?
Yeah, look, you know, the urgent manner in which the applicants brought this application, lockdown started 19 days before this application was brought. A week before lockdown is supposed to end, they rushed to court and brought it on an urgent basis. We raise points like this, constitutional points, you have to put up a notice at the court, outside the court, to give notice, 21 days notice to people to come and oppose this matter. The notice was put up. You had like 2 days. Nobody ever saw that notice because of lockdown. You can't leave the confines of your house. So the urgent manner in which applicants brought this application meant that the practical effect that the public was not notified. Now, Muslims only got wind of it by stealth, of the stealth through the grapevine. Because, you know, the world's a small place. Somebody's going to tell somebody and the word got out. Now, that is why I think the final order to open all religious gatherings really seems to be a non-starter.
All right, so now here's a difficult one. Given the scientific, legal, and Sharia opposition, what was the essence of the applicant's argument?
Okay, look, it's a little bit difficult to explain, you know, partly because of certain inconsistencies in the argument, and partly because it changed, you know, on a daily basis, it kept changing. But look, I'll try to give it a shot as best as I can. The applicants began by praising our precedent, and I quote now from their papers, our precedent's remarkable level of foresight and leadership in instituting the national lockdown, in averting the crisis facing even the first world countries. They also stated that they did not wish, and I quote again, they did not wish to undermine the efforts of our honorable president in fighting the COVID-19 pandemic.
So why did they come to court?
Okay, the applicants, having said that, started off by painting that lovely picture. They then relied heavily on fatwa of Mufti A.K. Hussein. And they began by stating that every single Muslim individual is obliged to read Salah. Every single individual. There's no distinction. Muslim individual is obliged to read Salah in congregation. They also stated that a person contracted a virus only because Allah wills it. Therefore, the scientific claims and whatever the state was saying, and the state had put up all fancy graphs and parabolas and curves and whatever. You saw Slim Abdul Karim, professor's his command performance that he gave on TV. That was basically the state's case, the scientific case. Therefore, all the scientific claims of how a virus spread were wrong.
Mm.
Now, having said that, that the virus is wrong, only if Allah gives it to you, you'll catch it. Notwithstanding these firm fatwas and firmly held views, they offered the court that if the court agreed to open the Dijal Masjid only, then they would agree to a limit of 20 musallis at a time and do hand sanitizing, wear gloves, wear masks, bring your own musallas, blah, blah, blah. So it isn't quite consistent with what their beliefs were. Later on, they changed their request and got another fatwa from Mufti A.K. Hussein that as long as four males read in congregation at the mosque, then the entire community is absolved from the major sin of not reading in congregation.
Mm.
So every individual went down to 20, but 20 you could have relays, 20 at a time. So within the namaz period, you could, as many as those 20 at a time, you could slot in. And then,
so that changed to four males in the masjid, in congregation.
Correct.
Which absolved the community.
Entire community from sin.
I see. The entire court case was broadcast live on ITV. I missed most of it. The applicants argued that all religious gatherings must be allowed and that a mosque is a place where a woman is able to seek refuge. I heard that part somewhere.
Okay. All right. Look, I think firstly, hats off to ITV. It was such of huge interest to the Muslim community, quite rightly so. I mean, namaz is such an important part. The applicant's case had elements of it. Most of the leaders, adherents, and supporters of this group advanced a rigid and patriarchal view of Islam. We know the labels some cast at people who do not share their belief system. Even eminent Muslim leaders are ridiculed with label of a reverend. Now, for them to state that the court, that they want all religious sites open, because quoting the Holy Quran, Allah's name is mentioned in all of these religious places. I think that may be misleading. This group who insist that women must be confined to the darkest corners of their homes declare on oath that the mosque is a place where women, especially the abused, can seek refuge, obtain advice, food, and calmness from stress. Now surely all this would mislead a non-Muslim judge. On Wednesday, they put up a list. Thursday was a court hearing. On Wednesday, they put up a list on oath of more Muslim organizations, etc., that supported lockdown relaxation. Now, at least one, the Isopingo top mosque, was never consulted. And in fact, had sent a letter to Majlis distancing themselves when a similar petition was tried on 7th April. The letter from this mosque stated, that was 10th April 2020, it was headed misrepresentation. The letter talks of deception, disassociates itself from the petition to open masjids during lockdown, disassociates itself from the persons who are dividing the ummah. That's what the letter said. We disassociate ourselves from persons who are dividing the ummah. Yet, this same mosque was alleged in the Wednesday affidavit on 20th April as in support of the applicant's case.
Right, we're going to speed up a little bit. If I recall on that previous occasion, a number of organizations who were listed as supporting relaxation of the lockdown sent angry letters claiming deception and withdrew their support.
you know, maybe my parents taught me about Salahuddin, whose chivalry is still praised by Christendom centuries later. I don't think winning at all costs is the Islamic way. This type of conduct may tarnish the image of Muslims amongst other communities. You know, when my great-grandfather peddled his wares to farm, the illiterate Bura housewives would give him a pot of money. Here, take whatever is rightfully due to you. That was the trust people had in Muslims.
Now, on social media, I saw criticism of Uksa for using a Jewish firm.
Yeah, Zahir Umar's Victoria agent is Friedland, Hart, Solomon, Nicholson attorneys. Uksa used ENS, the largest firm in Africa, law firm. In South Africa, it has 9 Muslim partners. ENS Johannesburg, Cape Town have mass facility and certified halal kitchen. I should also mention attorney Arshad Mohammed, whose letter was put up by the applicants and the state in their papers. He's a BA in Sharia from Al-Azhar University. He's currently practicing as an attorney in Pretoria.
Right. And now, at the end, the state advocate was talking about giving government 2 weeks to reconsider its regulations.
Yeah, look, because of the separation of powers between legislature, executive, and judiciary, a court is unlikely to make rules like an interim order. All the judge can say is the law is irrational, it's unconstitutional, I'm sending it back to be refashioned, in which case it would give the legislature 2 years. In this case, it's the executive, so it might be a different period. The state said that the final order and the interim order must fail because the proper case hadn't been made out. But if the judge felt inclined, it could give government 2 weeks to reconsider its regulations. Now, I'm not sure why the state offered that lifeline. It will simply lead to more litigation.
But can the state declare the regulations as unconstitutional?
Yeah. Look, if the state was able to use less restrictive means to achieve the object of lessening the curve, then it is obliged to do so. That's in terms of our constitution. But the rights requested by the applicants also compete with other rights in the constitution. The right to life, gender equality, human dignity, to name just a few.
All right, in 2 minutes we're going to round off. Should the applicants have gone to court?
Look, from a legal point of view, we live in a democracy. You're entitled to approach the court for relief. If this avenue was not open, then people may be encouraged to take the law into their own hands. But then again, if anybody wants to oppose or assist the court, they have every right to do so as well. As for the wisdom and politics, that's the task of media, mainstream like yourself, and of course the social media, which have opinions on everything.
What is the law after lockdown?
First May, further categories of activities are relaxed. The ban on religious gatherings remains in place. There is no change.
Right, and the final question to you, Aslam.
Have we done much time? Well, I could just conclude if you want, or I can ask your final question.
Let me just ask you a final question. Why are we not following models like the USA and the UK?
Yeah, look, every country has its own challenges. One size cannot fit all. US adopted the ostrich approach. Hope for the best, with no national strategy, it had the largest number of deaths, 50,000. UK tried the herd approach, that enough people catch COVID, it will build an immunity in the population. That's also failed. And on Sweden kept the old folks at home, but the youngsters went and brought it back to the home, so that's also failed. South Africa has tried the total lockdown, and only time will tell.
If I could just conclude,
look, like in any crisis, this COVID crisis, the Ummah has excelled with relief, both monetary and actual field work. We have to thank our champions. They make us proud. But we pray for your safety. Do not take unnecessary precautions. Tie your camels as best as you can. Let us use this time to pray for the Ummah and also for the rest of South Africa. Ramadan Mubarak to the listeners, and thank you, AB.
Well, there you are. You've been listening to Aslam Mayat.
clarifying the issue of the court case relating to whether the masjid should be opened. Aslamayat, Jazakallah for giving us all those details, and may you also and your family have a wonderful Ramadan, inshallah.
Jazakallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
Well, listeners, you heard it all. And we've come to the end of the program. We've run out of time. Could have gone on a little bit more. But until next week, this is A.B. Dawji wishing you all Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.